DEN Bio, the ultimate Broncos podcast with Nate Lundy.
And welcome to another edition of the NFL Files. My name is Nate Lundy. Thank you for being here. Week one in the National Football League is in the books. We now get a chance to look back at week one and also start to preview week two. We will do so by checking in on the team, figuring out the very latest injuries, expectations, the highs and lows of week one. Then we'll go around the NFL. We'll do that with the NFL Network's Brian Billick. And then in overtime this week, speaking of the NFL Network, one of the newest faces there on the NFL Network, Mike Garofolo, will join me for overtime, a six-pack of questions. It all gets started right now on the NFL Files.
The Big Interview.
From the ABC affiliate in Denver, Denver 7, Troy Rank spent 15 years with the Denver Post. He's covered the Rockies. He's covered the Broncos. I think there's just about everything that Troy has covered in this town, but now he is working with Denver 7. Troy is our guest to preview the Broncos. Before we preview this weekend, Troy, let's look back on the win over the Panthers. We know that ultimately it came down to a missed kick, but so often that's not really the play that is really the deciding factor. What were some of the big plays in that game for you that are what led to Denver getting the victory?
Well, they were able to run the football. C.J. Anderson was the best player on the field for the Broncos, 92 yards rushing. He was a factor in the passing game. And people don't realize he didn't score, I don't think, last year until week six. He didn't have a receiving touchdown last year. So to come out and have one receiving touchdown and a touchdown on the ground, that was huge. The defense, you know, whether people think they crossed the line, the reality is in the second half, they played angry, they played physical, they hit, and they held the Panthers to 3 points. They made a statement in the second half. A lot of the communication issues that they dealt with in the first half got cleaned up. So what stuck for me was they were able to run the ball. Trevor Siemian was efficient, not great, but efficient. And they won despite turning the ball over 3 times in the opponent's 30-yard line, which is unusual against a good team. So a lot of room for improvement, but you see things that make you think the last season didn't end.
When you talk about that defense and how tough they played, Troy, I mentioned the fact that you've covered the Rockies, you've done that. In my background, I spent some time covering NBA, including Rasheed Wallace, and I remember that Sheed kind of had a reputation going into games, and all he had to do was blink funny at an official, and he'd get a technical foul. When you look at these Broncos, do you get worried that that reputation will start to precede them and that officials are going to be quick to throw the yellow flag?
Well, it did last year at times. I mean, this is nothing new. I mean, they led the league in fines, if my math is right, last year for penalties like this. I mean, it's the price of doing business when you want to change your reputation from a finesse team to a hard nose, play hard, punch you in the throat, nasty team. And that this is part of it. When you get up to the line, there are going to be times you cross it, and they do. But do I worry about the officials targeting him? I would say the hits on quarterbacks, that I think the officials are going to be a little more keenly aware of those. For whatever reason, you know, that game got physical with Cam Newton. Newton was jawing at them, so that kind of only threw kerosene on the fire. But the officials seemed to let a couple hits go. Brandon Marshall will likely get fined for his hit on Newton for leaving his feet. Darian Stewart, his helmet-to-helmet on Cam Newton, which has, you know, created this investigation about whether the concussion protocol was followed. But yeah, I would say specifically the hits on the quarterback, will the refs will be more aware of, and they have to be careful. They have to be careful because you want to be physical, but there's that line where it becomes selfish when you start hurting your team.
After the game, the talk has been all about the Broncos defense, but Troy, going into the game, it was all about Trevor Siemian. What's your assessment of his performance in his first game starting in the NFL?
You know, just the idea that the moment's not too big. Trevor's a smart guy. He's a calm guy. He's got a dry wit. You know, in college, he was nicknamed Cool Hand Luke. I mean, he's that guy. He's a guy's guy. He processes information quickly. He translates it from meetings to the practice field. And all that's great. I mean, I covered Brian Greasy, and a lot of the same things you hear about Greasy, you hear about Siemian. I would say this, the difference between the two of them is Greasy was kind of shoved down the player's throat, and it was such a shocking change from Bubby Brister, whom all the players thought was going to start in 1999. And, you know, after the last preseason game, they got thrown a curveball, and he wasn't particularly popular in the room, as they say, in the locker room. That may have changed. I didn't cover him much longer, and I know Brian has since done marvelous work in the community, and he's got a presence here in Denver still. But the reality was that move did not go over well. Simeon, players were openly pulling for him to me during camp. That's when I knew, you know, when they said it was an open competition, you thought, well, is it in name only? And then when they didn't declare a winner in June, and then they go into camp and Sanchez takes a slight lead early in practice. And Simeon, what impresses me is he's consistent. He doesn't seem to get bothered by anything. And teammates appreciate that. When you get into the huddle, he exudes confidence because he knows the playbook so well. Now he has to continue to play well, being smart, knowing plays, you know, they have coaches for that too. So you have to perform, but players like the idea that he doesn't panic, and that gives them confidence in him. And yet that showed when he had a couple of bad plays that he rebounded from them. Now he can't turn the ball over a couple times every game, but you do see signs of a player that can be an efficient NFL quarterback.
When you look at his development and the way that he performed, I think maybe going through training camp and through the preseason, there was a thought process, Troy, of maybe they need to try to speed up the growth curve for Paxton Lynch. We know it's only 1 week, but do you think at this point the coaching staff is saying, okay, we can get by with Trevor Siemian, we don't need to try to rush Lynch?
Well, Lynch has been on a parallel track the whole time. They've been trying to microwave his development since the day he was drafted. The reality is, though, he's not ready right now. You could play him right now, Nate, and the problem is you'd eliminate most of the playbook. You'd probably go to more shotgun, quick ins and outs. He's the best athlete of the quarterback on the team, clearly. He'd be the best quarterback athlete on a lot of teams, frankly. But right now, he's still digesting the playbook. And the worst thing you want a guy to do is go out there and not be ready and really struggle with a minimal playbook, and his teammates are looking at him like, geez, this guy's not ready. Remember, it's not like throwing a rookie cornerback out there or safety or D lineman. They have to speak to their teammates in the huddle. They have to know what's going on. They have to know their position and other positions. So buying a little time from him is fine. I mean, just you don't go from algebra to calculus. Give him a little bit of time. It's happened organically to a point, and also they've microwaved it to a point, but don't rush it if he's not ready. Let him tell you when he's ready. And if he plays this season, it probably means things haven't gone like the Broncos had hoped, but regardless of how this season goes, I would expect him to compete for the job in every way next training camp. This is viewed as a transition / bridge year. I mean, Paxton Lynch is their future, but that, you know, that could be next training camp. It doesn't have to be this year.
Speaking of who's ready and who's not, and obviously, Troy, as you and I sit here and record this, it's on Tuesday. We'll know more later this week. But what are you hearing about the injury to Demaryius Thomas and kind of your expectations here for week two for DT?
Well, he's expected to practice on Wednesday. And if he does that, obviously it gives him a great chance to be available on Sunday. A lot of these things, you know, just because a guy practices Wednesday, Thursday, that's good. Because if you don't, you're not going to play. But what version of him is going to play? And he's moving around okay. You know, he sees it more like a day-to-day thing. Nothing serious yet, but it bears watching. Remember, he changed his body type dramatically. He's 222 pounds. He's essentially 10 pounds lighter. He's the weight he played at in high school. So he's trying to probably, you know, learn about his body and contact and how, you know, he feels everything a little more than he used to when he was carrying an extra 10 pounds. So 8 to 10 pounds. But for now, Nate, the expectation is he will practice. It might be limited, but he'll practice on Wednesday, which would put him in line to play on Sunday.
Troy, after seeing the fact that the Detroit Lions by no means are a team known for rushing the football, and yet they had success with Ameer Abdullah, Theo Riddick, both coming, not only running the ball, but coming out of the backfield. Do you have a feeling that Rick Dennison and C.J. Anderson and even Capri Bibbs, Devontae Booker, are all kind of licking their chops to face this Colts team in week two?
Yeah, they need to establish the run. The Colts have had issues both running the ball. I don't think they've had a 100-yard rusher in a game in 4 or 5 years, and they don't run the ball well. They're pretty one-dimensional, and they struggle to stop the run, and that's the best friend for Trevor Siemian. Because remember, this last game, they came out and threw, five consecutive passes on purpose. He had show confidence in him. But in an ideal world, for Simeon, you use the run to set up the pass.
Yep.
And you gash him, and then boom, you hit him deep. And we didn't really see any vertical passing game from the Broncos. That would be the next evolution in this, is gash him with the run to the point where they've got to respect that and then play action, boom. You know, either seam route or a long drag route to a tight end. But the running game, like, remember, when they went under center last year, they were a top 10 running team. From when Brock Osweiler went under center at Chicago, they went from essentially like 89 yards a game all the way up to like 130 yards a game. And this last game, they were, what, 144 or something of that degree. I mean, that's a top 10 type running team. That's who they want to be. That's who Kubiak's always been. So I would definitely, in this game, I would think they would lean a little more to using the run to set up the pass.
Last one for you. In the short passing game, Virgil Green seems to be establishing himself not just as a blocker and kind of a utility knife, Swiss Army type of player, but definitely as a pass catcher as well. We know that can be a friend to a new quarterback. Do you see him continuing to expand his role over the course of the next couple of weeks and maybe starting to make more of a name for himself across the league?
Well, he can catch, and he said that for 3 years. I mean, he was a little bit insulted last year that they acquired Vernon Davis, frankly. Now, Davis was faster. Like, he gave him a speed element. He didn't end up paying off because he didn't catch the ball very often and couldn't, whatever. But he was a different player than Green in terms of his speed up the field. But Virgil Green should be a nice weapon. It would help if they could get Jeff Heuerman back and productive to see what the offense would look like with two tight ends who are legitimately pass-catching tight ends. John Phillips really isn't that. He's more of a blocking tight end. So, but I do expect at the end of the season, we look up and see that Virgil Green's had a nice year where he's had, you know, 40 catches and five touchdowns and 560 yards type season, that kind of season that Owen Daniels would have, or a Crockett, maybe a little under that, but a Crockett Gilmore. I mean, he should be able to get five touchdowns and 500 yards in this offense, but it would help him tremendously if Heuerman, if he's the guy, and I don't know anymore because I haven't seen him, can Heuerman get on the field and be a second threat in the passing game, how much that could help Virgil Green.
Troy Rank covering the Broncos for Denver 7 in Denver. You find him on Twitter at Troy Rank. That's R-E-N-C-K. Troy, great stuff as always. Really appreciate it.
All right, Nate. Always great to talk to you, man. Take care.
There goes Troy Rank. Up next, the coach, Brian Billick.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that each week with the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick, and as he is each week, he's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Make sure you've got the SeatGeek app on your mobile device or that you're visiting SeatGeek.com. Make sure you, your family, your friends are always getting the best deal on tickets, and you do that with the SeatGeek app. Coach, let's start here with the Monday night game. A lot of people surprised not only for Jared Goff not to start, but not even active. I know I'm asking you to speculate, but why do you believe the number one overall pick is not out there for the Rams, given how inept their offense looked overall?
Well, you can only assume that Jeff Fisher doesn't think he's ready. I mean, let's go back to Jeff's history. When they drafted Steve McNair back in the 90s, he didn't actually start until his third season. They carried him along, felt like they needed to nurture him. They had two losing seasons leading up to that, and then he finally found his way into the starting lineup. If Jared Goff is not better than Case Keenum, they got a real problem, because obviously they were betting on playing great defense, running the ball, which they didn't last night. Todd Gurley only had 47 yards in 17 carries. And Case Keenum, maybe you can play that formula where he was only 17 to 35, but he had two interceptions. If you're going to play that play great defense, run the ball formula, you got to run the ball, can't turn it over. So if they're not going to play a lot better than that, you got to put Jared Goff in just to get the experience.
Coach, is the Niners defense improved, or was this just a matter of the Rams being that bad?
Well, we're going to find out. We don't know, because the Rams offense was basically so inept. So we're going to have to see how it pans out. It's likely they're a little bit better than we all thought they were going to be, but their roster, when you look at it, you have some question marks, notwithstanding even the offensive side. Obviously, what Chip Kelly's doing, they have a lot of confidence. They obviously look pretty good. But we're going to find out, particularly this week, when they're going to play the Seattle Seahawks. We're going to find out more about L.A. and the fact that they play the Seattle Seahawks. In terms of San Francisco 49ers, the next step for them, obviously, is to, can they indeed go on the road? And it's a tall task because they're going across the country to the Carolina Panthers. Now you're going to see a legitimate run offense. You're going to see maybe the best quarterback or the best athlete in the game in Cam Newton and a very, very good Carolina defense. So it's going to be a test for the 49ers. They go across the country and put that kind of performance together against Carolina, then yeah, then we're all going to say, nope, we were all kind of wrong. This team's pretty good.
For some people looking at the AFC, the Steelers were a bit of a sleeper pick for some experts, Coach. Did you see that out of them in their Monday night contest against Washington? Could they contend in the AFC?
Well, I've on record, I had Pittsburgh down as my Super Bowl team. I think they could be, if, and this is a huge if they can stay healthy. And that's the key. And we're talking about Ben Roethlisberger, obviously Antonio Brown. That offensive line, which is healthy and looks spectacular. You know, yeah, Le'Veon Bell's not there, but D'Angelo Williams, let's remember last year he cranked off 127 yards in the opener as well. So D'Angelo Williams is a good, physical, you know, Pittsburgh Steeler type of runner that they got to love doing, you know, seeing what he's doing for them. And defensively, I think they're improved. They're healthy, although you see Ryan Shazier may be hurt. I go back to the injury situation. Of course, that's true of any team. But they were obviously spectacular. Washington's suspect on defense. But I still feel like Pittsburgh is the team to beat in the AFC. They, too. Okay, now you got to follow up with it because you've got a Cincinnati team coming into town that looked pretty good, and it's open.
When we look at the AFC, Coach, and you know this as well as anyone, you can't bet against Bill Belichick. There were those that said if the Patriots could go through their first four games without Tom Brady and be 2-2, that everybody would be happy. But based on how they performed against Arizona, is it out of the realm of possibilities that they might be 3-1 or even 4-0 by the time Brady comes back?
Yeah, and I was one of them on our show, Game Day First, for the NFL Network. We were talking about it, and I believe all of us picked Arizona to win, and to a man, we said, but we're nervous about it, because anytime you pick against the Patriots and Belichick, and particularly a Brady-less Belichick, you have a little bit of confidence. They come back and bite you every time. So, no, this bodes well for them. For them, they don't look at it that way, and he's the master at one game at a time. They got Miami coming to town, so it's a divisional game, which is important for them. But I'd be surprised if anybody picks the Patriots to lose to Miami at home.
Speaking of Miami, they went on the road in really just a defensive slugfest there against Seattle. What did you see out of the Dolphins? And also, Coach, what did you see out of Seattle?
Well, and that I was impressed with that. I mean, that's a tough place to go. We talked last week about the value I put on the ability to go on the road and win, particularly in an opener, and particularly when you're talking about Miami going to Seattle. They'd been better off going to London. It would be an easier trip for them. That's a tough slot. The defense was impressive. I think it was an example of Russell Wilson this year. I think is going to have to be finally a 500-plus throw quarterback. He's been under that his first few years because they haven't had to do more than that. Play great defense, run the ball. Not that they're not going to continue to play great defense. They ran the ball okay, but Russell Wilson threw the ball 43 times. And I think we're going to see more of that this year because they're going to need for him to throw the ball in order to get the win.
We know it was against the Cleveland Browns, but at the same time, Carson Wentz came out, a guy that just a few weeks ago, Coach, wasn't even expected to start because Sam Bradford was there, and he wound up with 278 yards, a couple of touchdowns. What did you think of the rookie's performance?
Yeah, very impressive. I mean, particularly for a rookie, you just want to see, are they overwhelmed? Do they look like they can function? And both he and Dak Prescott played very, very well. It was interesting to watch them. It was the same game plan. Both opened up with a lot of boots and outside the pocket, to settle them down, make it an easy read, and then eventually evolved where they had to throw more from the pocket. Now, and it's good for their development. I don't know that you want a rookie throwing the ball 37 times a game like Wentz did or 45 times like Dak Prescott. But from a development standpoint, because that puts them on a 600-throw season, which would be great for their development as a quarterback, but in terms of winning games and that profile, that would be a steep curve for these rookies. But I tell you what, they look like they were up to it. Where you saw it was down on third down. Both struggled a little bit in third down in those critical areas. Although Carson Wentz in the red zone looked pretty good. So, you had to be pleased, even though, of course, Dallas lost. You had to be pleased, both teams, with the starts of their rookies, Dak Prescott and Carson Wentz.
Kansas City Chiefs pull off the biggest comeback for them in 56 years with their franchise. Is this a legit AFC West contender? I would assume so, based on what we've seen out of Andy Reid and Alex Smith managing the game.
Oh, absolutely. And it was who didn't play for them that's significant, that they all but at home could come back that way. That'll give them a lot of confidence. Now, obviously, Denver looks to be very solid. Huge win by the Oakland Raiders in New Orleans. They're going to be a factor as well. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think this is going to be a very tight division, but certainly that bodes well for Kansas City, if nothing else, give them the confidence to know, yeah, even without Jamal Charles and some of the other players we didn't have there, we're a pretty good football team.
You just brought up the Raiders, and it's been an interesting conversation in looking at Oakland, because there were those that have criticized their opening game, saying, well, wait, this was supposed to be a team that was extremely strong on defense, and here they gave up 34 points. But the counter to that, coach, is, well, just about everybody gives up at least 30 points facing Drew Brees.
Yeah, if you're going to dismiss anybody, everybody that gives up a lot of points, a lot of yards, Drew Brees, the Northern Saints, at home in that dome, you can, you know, check off pretty much the entire league. You know, this guy's pretty good. I was very impressed with Oakland's ability to go on the road in one of the toughest places to play of all football, particularly in the opener, and to do it in the way they did, to come back the way they did, to go for it on two-point conversion twice and to get it. That bodes very well for that team, or resiliency on that team. And, yeah, certainly some things, the big plays they're going to have to cut down on. I know that was disappointing for Ken Norton Jr. And his defense, but they're not the Lone Ranger in that regard when it comes to Northern Saints. Northern Saints defense continues. They're going to have a tough time this year because Drew Brees and Sean Payton know once again they got to score a minimum of 30 points a game or they got no chance.
Takes a lot of guts to do what Coach Jack Del Rio did at the end of the game. Coach, do you think you could have done the same thing if you were coaching?
Well, I've told in a lot of interviews that I'm doing talk about, you typically, particularly going on the road, you'll get with the staff and say, okay, guys, what's our mentality going to be at the end of the game? We've got to go for two. I mean, you put that down specifically at what do you guys think? It's different at home than it is possibly on the road. And go through the mindset of Jack Del Rio. Okay, I'm going to take a 50-50 chance of getting a two-point play. Or what are my odds if I go into overtime in New Orleans on the road that late in the game against that crowd and, oh, by the way, against the Hall of Famer like Drew Brees? I kind of like my odds with the two-point play rather than putting it in Drew Brees' hand.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. We say it every week. If you spend 10, 15 minutes with the coach, you're a smarter football fan. He's brought to us every week here on the NFL Files podcast by SeatGeek. Make sure you've downloaded the SeatGeek app or visited SeatGeek.com. It's a great way for you to make sure if you're getting tickets to a sporting event or a concert that you're getting the absolute best deal for you and your friends. That's the SeatGeek app. Coach, appreciate the time as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely.
Overtime.
For Overtime on the NFL Files, Mike Garofolo from NFL Network. First of all, Mike, congratulations on making the jump to NFL Network. We've got a six-pack of questions for you, rapid-fire style. Let's start here. After seeing what happened with Jack Del Rio, are we going to see more coaches go for two?
I don't think so. I think a lot of them are still conservative by nature, and Jack Del Rio is a more forward-thinking coach and has been for a while, so it doesn't shock me that he's the guy, and you know, there is an old adage, you play for the win on the road, you play for the tie at home, so maybe the situation, bared out for that one, and the momentum that they had at the time. I just don't see that being something that all of a sudden coaches are going to start doing, because the minute they fail, they're going to be called upon as bozos.
All right, question number two in the six-pack. For you, the biggest surprise of week one?
Probably the Detroit Lions. I went up there and I heard all that positive talk about their offense and how they wouldn't miss Calvin Johnson, and everything I heard was that this offense actually, not that they not that they'd be better off without Calvin Johnson, but for this offense, the way that they want to spread the ball around, nothing really runs through one person. So that they'd be able to kind of move that ball around. And you hear that, and you go, yeah, but you're going to be without Calvin Johnson. So how is that possible? Well, you saw on display. Now, that's not the best defense they're going to face all year. Maybe one of the worst, as a matter of fact. So they're going to have to continue to prove that. But to me, that was a surprise they were able to pull that one off.
All right, Mike, question number three. Does Larry Fitzgerald actually have a secret fountain of youth? And if so, how do you and I get some of it?
He is amazing. And it's all about how he takes care of his body and his dedication to the game. And it is up there with some of the greats of all time. And I don't know if it's going to be his last season. I think a lot of it's going to depend on what kind of success the Cardinals have and whether he thinks this team could you know, have more success a year from now. I don't think that decision's been made yet. I think it's a possibility, but at the very least, I think he could absolutely continue to play at a high level for beyond this season.
It's overtime on the NFL Files. Mike Garofolo from NFL Network with me. Follow him on Twitter, at Mike Garofolo. Mike, question number four, true or false, the Patriots will go 4-0 with Jimmy Garoppolo?
I'll go true. Yeah, just because they've got three more home games here, and then they catch Houston on a short week on the Thursday night game at home. So, I think it's a possibility, and sure, I'll ride with my somewhat similar namesake, Jimmy.
There you go. All right, question number five for you. Based on what you saw in week one, who wins the NFC East?
I'm still going Redskins, just because I didn't expect anybody to run away with it. I still don't. I think that's a terrific team that they played. I'm not going to overreact to that one. I do think that there are holes on that roster. I think there's things that they need to patch up, but I'm not going to overreact to that one. There's going to be the opposite of overreaction Monday, even though it's beyond Monday, but it's going to be the opposite of that, because I still believe that they're going to be the team that winds up coming out on top.
Mike Garofolo with me. Last question for you in our six-pack. If you had the choice, and obviously the athletic ability as well, Mike, if you had the choice, would you rather catch a touchdown from your favorite quarterback or sack your most hated rival quarterback?
Probably the TD. Just because, you know, those guys, the skill position guys get all the glory, and then you get to do, well, I guess you can do a dance after the sack, but the end zone dances to me are always, there's more options down there amongst the fans and the goalposts and all that stuff. I'd even draw a penalty for using something as a prop.
All right, bonus answer to this one, Mike. Who would that quarterback be for you? Who's your favorite? Who would you want to be on the receiving end of?
My favorite of all time? I grew up watching Randall Cunningham, so that would have to be my guy.
There you go. Mike Garofolo with us on Overtime on the NFL Files. Make sure you watch him now that he's on NFL Network. Again, congratulations, and follow him on Twitter, at Mike Garofolo. Mike, appreciate the time. Thanks for joining me.
You got it, Nate.
Mike Garofolo, NFL Network, appreciate his time. As I mentioned, just made the jump from Fox to NFL Network, and prior to that, he had been with USA Today. So definitely moving up the ladder when it comes to covering football. Appreciate your time joining me this week on this edition of the NFL Files. My name is Nate Lundy. Talk to you next week right here.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.